And now for something a little, or maybe a lot, different for the end of the show on this Friday morning, Tuvan throat singing. Researchers at the University of Arizona covered the secret to how this Central Asian practice is done. And if you've never heard it before, when you do, you'll understand why it was a mystery to begin with. These singers somehow make two different sounds at once. Here's more from Professor Brad Story with the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences at the U of A. He spoke with our co-host, Lauren Gilger.
The type of throat singing that we studied originates in the region of Tuva, which is right almost dead center in the middle of Asia. It's a very unusual way of producing sound in that it's a way of producing usually two, sometimes even one, almost a pure tone kind of sound from the human voice, which is very difficult to accomplish with the human voice based on the way that that our sound production system works. The type that we were looking at is called hume, where you have a basic fundamental pitch, and then there's sort of an enhancement of two to three what are called overtones.
So in this study, I want to back up for a second and talk about how you did this, because I think this is really interesting. So you're looking at, you know, how is it possible, essentially, that they can do this? How do they physically make this sound, two sounds at once kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And then you developed, I understand, a computer model to actually show how their throats work in this process, how they're doing it. How did you come up with that? How do you translate someone's, you know, vocal cords and the way that they're working into a computer model?
Right. So the computer model is really an area of research that I've been working on for most of my career. In fact, it's really based on simulating, or in effect synthesizing, speech. But the way that it works is that we're representing the shape of the throat and the mouth, and its coupling to the larynx as the sound source. Hmm. Within the sound source are the vocal folds that vibrate, and they provide this fundamental pitch that we all would lock into whenever you hear somebody speak or sing. And along with that pitch is all of these overtones that go along with it. And in typical speech, what we're doing is we're taking and shaping large groups of those overtones, increasing the energy in one group and suppressing in another. And that's what differentiates, say, an A vowel from an E vowel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sounds like humans. And of course, with our computer simulation model, we're able to do a lot of interesting, really computer-like experimentation on how speech works.
Hmm.
So that was the baseline, is to start with exactly that same model and figure out what does this model need to do in order to replicate what the Tuvan singers are doing. And through a means of what we call optimization, we were able to really take our model of the throat and the mouth and deform it in many, many different ways until we figured out a control system that these singers might be using to be able to enhance the overtones in this unique way that they do in Tuvan singing.
So when we're speaking normally or singing normally, we're only producing one sound. They are able to do this essentially through operating entirely differently within their own vocal cords. How do they learn it?
Well, you know, they have a long history of teaching people, you know, how to do create these types of sounds. But I mean, one way that many people could get started in the right direction is to begin with an R sound, the R kind of sound. If you really create an extreme R type sound, it begins to do that. And so what you do with an R is that, as I said before, with a vowel sound, we're trying to enhance different groupings of overtones. And we do that with, and I'm going to get into technical jargon a little bit, but the airspace itself, the throat and the mouth, the way in which they create the vowels is that the particular shape of that airspace creates what are called resonances. And those resonances are exactly what allows us to move energy around in these different groupings of overtones. What the Tuvan singers are doing is they're of those resonances, and they're forcing them together to be tight together at exactly the same pitch.
Huh.
And what that does is that they build on top of each other. It's kind of like building a very sharp peak in a tent.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like having two tents that come together and you have a tent that's twice as high as the original tent.
So this is what you mean when you say that they're using their throats like musical instruments.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I want to ask you a little bit about how you got into this field of study, because this is a very specific thing to look at and to figure out how to do.
Sure. Well, my degree a long time ago, my bachelor's degree was in physics, and I took a job in an industry that built mufflers for over-the-highway trucks and large construction equipment and so on. And that's really where I learned a lot of acoustics. But we were building computer models of exhaust systems. And an exhaust system is really acoustically and physically not a whole lot different than the human vocal tract. And the reason I say that is that what we're looking at is really how waves, acoustic waves, propagate or travel through complicated spaces.
Sure. So that's what you're doing when you're creating mufflers.
Exactly. It's exactly the same thing. It's
that's
just,
so interesting.
You know, you have obviously the size of the system is very different and the temperature, the operating temperature is quite different. But all of the physics are really the same.
So what's next? I mean, this is a very specific study on, you know, these specific singers. What other applications are there for the work that you do for this model that you've created?
Well, most of what we do with these models is actually to study speech production. A computer model of speech production allows us to do a lot of virtual experiments of the type that we really can't do with human beings, because the speech production system itself, of course, it's part of our lifeline. It's our part of our respiration system, and so we can't put a lot of instrumentation inside the system to determine what's going on. And so the models allow us to create a lot of what if games as to how things might work. And then we can compare that to, say, audio recordings of speech, of which there are plenty, and those are easy to come by. But the models also allow us to impose impairments that we hypothesize to be part of certain kinds of speech disorders, and understand the effect of that.
All right. Lots to come, I'm sure, then. That is Brad Story, a professor in the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences at the University of Arizona. Brad, thank you so much for coming on to tell us about this.
Well, thank you for having me.